Chapter 19. The Practical Education of Thought. The human brain has many wonderful faculties, among them the faculty of memory. All brain cells are able to receive and store certain impressions, sometimes many impressions of varying nature, simultaneously. This especially applies to the memory center. The type and quality of our senses depend on our character and inclination. When a group is together at a service, it is certain that no two pupils listen and experience in the same manner, and so afterwards they will not be similarly attuned. That would be desirable, but in our present state of being it is not yet possible. Our impressionability depends on our character and purpose, and these depend on the state of the lipika, the net of magnetic points of the seventh ring of the aural being that was revivified at our birth. This magnetic net, in which all the karmic influences are present, projects itself in the brain and keeps the brain cells in a preset condition. It not only projects itself inwardly, but also outwardly into the astral sphere. So there is a close relationship between the different aspects and forces of the astral sphere on the one hand and the human personality on the other, because the magnetic system is connected with the astral sphere and the brain. Furthermore, a fire burns in the head sanctuary, the flame of the mentality, the common brain thinking. This flame develops out of seven foci, which are found in the seven cerebral cavities. When the personality is fully grown, it possesses a mentality entirely in agreement with the nature of the brain cells, with that of the lipika, and with the astral sphere of ordinary nature. Consequently, the natural mentality is in complete equilibrium with the astral sphere of the nature of death. One could say that the astral sphere, and more particularly some of its forces or aeons, control human thought. When, during sleep, the personality splits and the astral body and the mind stay in the astral region, it is a normal procedure that the brain cells are recharged with and attuned to forces and influences which agree with the natural state of being. This is self-evident because, during the daytime, all brain cells are charged with inclinations which are concentrated in the memory. Besides the mentality, the faculty of the human will is situated in the head sanctuary. In the will center, we also find a powerful concentration of astral radiation permeating like a fire. Consequently, we find two fires in the head, the flame of thought and that of the will, both originating from the astral field, the field of sidereal radiations. In a normal human being, thinking comes before willing or desiring. Thought affects the brain cells, and the activity of the brain cells influences in turn the organ in which the will is situated. In this manner, the will or the desire to act or not to act is awakened. Thus, it is always the thought that defines our desire or will. That is why the universal doctrine gives a serious warning to all the candidates on the path. 5 minutes of ill-advised thinking can undo 5 years' work. It is perfectly clear and easy to remember the pupil needs to watch his thoughts. Wrong thoughts should be extinguished before desire is ignited. You sometimes feel the fire of desire or will flare up in you. It drives you to actions you regret. You hate it that it can happen to you, but thoughts came before the desire. That is why wrong thoughts must be purged before desire can be annulled. Before essential changes can take place in the system of the striving person, thoughts need to be altered. It is out of the question that the average man has his thoughts under control. We just think away chaotically. Who are we? It is the I that in ordinary man is situated in the liver spleen system. The I simply thinks away. Our thoughts are in harmony with our natural inclination and control our willing, desiring, and acting. Consequently, the blood condition and the entire state of being. With the help of the mentality, the personality is directed by astral influences and is kept in a certain state. He who is not able to control his thoughts cannot consider himself to be a true pupil of the spiritual school. For instance, when you enter a temple, you sit there with different and mostly rather strange trends of thought. If instruments could be found to measure and reproduce your thinking, you would be astonished to hear what your thoughts were from the moment you entered the temple, general thoughts and thoughts about your fellow pupils. The wheels in your head keep turning without any control. That is why we said, he who cannot keep his thoughts under control, he who is unable to modify his mentality, should not think that he is a true pupil. When you are together in the temple in this way, with different lines of thought that are to be explained from your natural state of being, you cause a chaotic whirlpool of astral radiations while you are sitting, apparently, very peacefully. Your mentality originates from the astral sphere, and in the midst of this chaos, the work must be done. Do you understand how fatal your civilized habits are? In fact, you are not at all civilized. Indeed, you dress as fashion dictates, you adopt the prescribed attitude in every situation, you play act with the best of intentions, but in general, there is no question of mental cleanliness, of mental purity. There is much in all of this on which to reflect. However, we will discuss only a few aspects connected with the subject that occupies us. The point at issue is, how can one most quickly and effectively protect the system against the influences of the astral sphere of dialectics, and how can one most expeditiously enter the sphere of the new astral field? Upon reading this, you should consider your reaction. Do our words have merely theoretical interest to you about which you do not ruffle a hair, or do you feel a profound concern when we posit this problem? Do you experience an earnest desire to be able to contact the new life field? You might also find the nature and the consequences of a stay in a different astral sphere very interesting, allowing you to approach our point of view from only scientific curiosity. But by that you would prove in fact that nothing has yet begun to change in your state of being. We explained how the astral sphere, the net of magnetic points in the aural being, the brain, the blood, and the body, form a unity affecting thought, will, and desire. They form the basis of overlapping processes which are active, like streams feeding a single river. Therefore, quite a lot is needed to intervene in the organism and to give it another direction. If your keen interest is directed to the topic of entrance into the new astral field and participation in the glorious divine astral life, if a profound desire emanates from you, your situation is hopeful. Why? Well, if thoughts of interest radiate from you towards the gnosis and its salvation, if an action of the will is connected with your desire to partake in the new astral field, then these thought and will actions are not to be explained from the natural state. They are then influenced by something unmistakably non-dialectical. We said that our being and its activities, initially the mentality, are imprisoned in the nature of death via the astral sphere. How then is it possible that our desires and thoughts go out to the gnosis? Do you realize that this is a vital question? It is vital, too, to consider the Gnostic life. Hence, the emphasis by which we draw your attention to it. A keen interest in the gnosis is not to be explained from ordinary consciousness, for our dialectical state is guided by the nature of death. How, then, do these other non-dialectical thoughts and feelings arise in us? They can have come to us only from outside by breaking into the system and propelling the mentality into another direction. If you recognize this situation as your own, you are engaged in drawing the consciousness up from the liver spleen system into the heart. Only such a consciousness is able to assimilate Gnostic influences. The heart becomes open for the Gnostic radiations. They mix with the blood, penetrate via the blood circulation into the head sanctuary, and have a remarkable influence on the mentality, causing thoughts to arise which do not correspond with the horizontal line of ordinary life. In this way, the gnosis breaks into the system and renders it a new faculty. At first, perhaps only as a thought flash, after which an impulse of the will and the desire goes out, wanting to seize the salvation hidden in the gnosis. When the gnosis awakens thoughts in you which are neither born out of karma, the lipika, the astral sphere, nor out of the blood of nature, but of God, then, from that.
Moment on, you can listen to the voice of the soul, or mystically stated to the voice of God. Then you are connected with the new astral field, with the gnosis, with the universal Gnostic chain. Now you can prove for yourself whether you possess something of all this. If so, rejoice with us, for you have the key to the path in your hands, in your system. Indeed, with the new faculty, you can stop thoughts which emanate from the natural self and give them a different direction in accordance with the demands of the path.
If you are unable to do this, you may absorb intellectually what we tell you and perhaps be able to repeat it literally, but it is of no use to you. Nothing will change in you. You need to use this new faculty immediately, even if you possess only the first aspect of it, to take hold of your thoughts and give them another direction. If you succeed, you may rest assured also of getting will and desire under control. In other words, you are able to control your activities according to the demand of the glorious new influence in your life. Self-sanctification, self-liberation, the path of healing, begins with your thought life. Whoever is not able to begin with this has to wait until the consciousness has been drawn up from the liver-spleen system into the heart. However, if you possess the new faculty and do not make use of it, you will ruin the process of your pupilship. Therefore, keep in mind the warning of the great ones. 5 minutes of ill-advised thinking, uncharitable thoughts full of criticism, envy, hate, etc., undo the work of your pupilship. This is why a practical redirection of thought is urgently necessary for all those who want to go the path. This is the intellectual education to which you need to submit in the spiritual school. The way to self-liberation is purification of the thought life to think truly. Do see the significance of this, as your self-revolution should begin in this way. Whoever begins the purification of his thoughts begins to break the ties between the personality system and the lipika, and, accordingly, the astral sphere. These ties make us into harlequins, as it were, because they induce us to act in accordance with the impulses emanating from the astral sphere. When one begins to change the mentality and the power of the gnosis, then one is gradually freed from this fatal influence. In the meantime, the heart opens increasingly. You become alienated from the nature of death and its astral sphere, and the Gnostic forces enter your system in great waves. Your new faculty becomes more vigorous, and through this self-sacrifice, you transfigure your astral body quickly. Thus, you are placed before a completely new beginning. Now ask yourself once more, does the profound longing to approach the gnosis, to enter the new life, really exist in me? Is this longing genuine? If your reply is a firm yes, then you have already entered the new beginning and received the new faculty. Then the issue is whether you will make consistently use of it. Only then can we speak successfully and with good reason of the soul life in the new astral field. Finally, consider this. Do not worry about dreams of a dialectical nature, which could make you think you have had no participation in the new astral life during the night. Disregard this uneasiness. A great many dreams, if not all, are due to the unloading of the brain cells, especially those of the memory center. For instance, if you have a strong imagination and have been thinking about banalities, letting yourself go, then the brain cells charge with many forces. During the sleep of the body, the brain cells discharge and cause dreams which to a high degree are confused and fragmentary, having affinity with your daydreams. Another example is that possibly you have been very busy with your social responsibilities so that you fall asleep dead tired. Then the brain cells are overcharged, and when they discharge at night, they produce several dreams. Therefore, don't worry about it. Don't pay attention to your dreams, even if they seem to be important. Just enclose them in the silence of your being, and soon you will know what to think and expect of them.